I should mention we were on the our campaign reform law, remember?
Welcome. We're actually going to be starting now. And I thank you for coming out and wanting to participate in a panel and a question and answer session. We think that's a great idea in Atascadero. In fact, former Mayor Ellen Bayrou and I are both were the campaign committee we had in our city years ago. And one of the things we worked hard at was doing forums for candidates, because we think that's the more the better, I think. And when the Latino Outreach Council said they wanted to do a forum in our community, first thing I said is we need a bigger place. But there's a lot of competition for places around town. We're getting very popular. So apologize for a smaller space, but it was free. We are going to begin our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. We found the best flag we could at the Carlton. I'm sorry. I've asked former Mayor Ellen Bayrou to lead us in the flag salute. Please join us.
Please stand. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm now going to turn it over to C.R. Lara, who is really the event organizer and behind this Latino Outreach Council event. And he will tell you all the rest. Thank you, C.R.
Welcome. On behalf of the Latino Outreach Council, we are very proud and thankful to Jim Patterson and Debbie Arnold for doing us the honor of basically hosting this event. There's some people that we would like to recognize for making it possible. Every event of this nature basically takes quite a bit of effort and different people participating. I think it would be appropriate for me to mention that the mission of the Latino Outreach Council is to facilitate the participation of Latinos in the life and affairs of San Luis Obispo County. And we've been around for 20 years, and we're very glad to be here with you and to be able to put this event together. At this time, I would like to name and introduce the panel that are going to basically be asking the questions for this evening. First of all is, by alphabetically, Dr. Jim Brescia. He's the superintendent of the schools for Cayucos. And I believe formally he was the principal of a private school in Paso Robles, St. Rose. Great school. Biz Steinberg, she is the executive director of the Community Action Partnership, formerly known as Economic Opportunity Commission, and I've known Biz for decades. Wonderful, Biz. Thank you very much. Last but not least is Heather Young, editor of our local newspaper, the Atascadero News. Thank you very much. Biz, please take it from here. Thank you.
Thank you, CR, and I think we all want to thank the Latino Outreach Council one more time for hosting this tonight. When I arrived this evening to such a large group waiting, I said, this is democracy. And for that, we want to thank both Debbie Arnold and Jim Patterson for being here and being ready to respond to very, very complex questions from the community. So let's thank our candidates. As Jim and Heather and I are looking at all these questions, we are going to do the very best job we can to get as many questions asked. But I want to give you a little rundown of how we will begin the evening. Both of our candidates will begin with an opening statement. We have a timekeeper that's going to be the hardest job tonight, is the timekeeper. She's going to be letting them know they have 3 minutes, is what I was told, to open with their statement. And we will start the opening statements with Debbie Arnold, and then Mr. Jim Patterson will do his. We will then begin with about 3 general questions from the Latino Outreach Council, which I believe is a fair way to begin, as they are our host tonight. So each can, and then we will start the questions, because Debbie will begin with the statement, Jim will begin with the first response to the question. Debbie then will respond, and each will have a minute to do a follow-up. When we get through all the questions, and I'm sure we will need somewhere about a 10-minute break, so that are mainly for us, to make sure we're getting through our piles of questions as efficiently and completely as possible. Then when we finish the questions, we will have an opportunity for each of our candidates again to do a concluding statement of 3 minutes, which then Jim Patterson will begin that, and Debbie will be our last speaker before we thank you all for coming. So with that brief plan, thank you for your participation. It's already happened up here. So thank you for coming out tonight, and I'll begin in just a moment with the first question. Our first statement, which will begin with Debbie Arnold.
Thank you so much, Biz. Well, I too want to thank the Latino Outreach Council and CR. I want to thank Jack and Natalie. They're still in the room. And the panelists for being here tonight. And most of all, I want to thank all of you for taking an interest in what I think is a very important important race and campaign. So I'll touch on 3 points, why I'm running for this office, why I think we need a change, and then lastly, what I will do to try to bring about some change to our county government. The first thing, why I'm running for this office. First of all, I love this county very much, and I think we can do better. I really want to preserve our small town and rural atmosphere here in this county, and I think that's all in jeopardy with the current policies that have been recently voted in. I want to see our economy thrive once again and bring job opportunities back to the county, especially for the next generation. And lastly, I want to bring my experience pages of new regulations since he's been in office, and also repeatedly raised fees and supported tax increases on the citizens here. Third point, what do I think I can do to bring about a change to our county government? Well, my first point would be to curb the excessive spending that comes with expansion of government's role in the county. Second would be to curb excessive regulation that I think is strangling our small businesses and killing jobs. And lastly, to curb the excessive intrusion of government into the private sector and free market, and try to bring the freedom of choice back to the consumer. So with all that, I would like to say I think that the choice is clear. If you prefer a more expansive government in the future, then Jim would be a choice for you. And if you would like to see our government a limited government, a more efficient government, then I hope you'll consider voting for me on June 5th.
Now we will turn... You know, I guess we clap. Thank you. And now we will turn to Mr. Jim Patterson's opening statement. Jim.
Thank you, Biz. I too want to thank all of those involved in sponsoring this event, and all of you for taking the opportunity to hear from the candidates. And based on what Ms. Arnold just said, I have to say that I'm her man. I have done what she has said needs to be done in San Luis Obispo County. I have the knowledge, experience, and leadership abilities to keep our county moving forward. Our county is best positioned of most of the counties in the state of California. We have reduced county government over the last 4.5 to 5 years by about 10%.
We've reduced our staffing 250 people without laying off a single individual. We have a AA+ bond rating, one of the best in the county, and it's based on our economic performance. We have introduced, again, one of the first counties in the state of California, a second-tier pension system that this year alone has saved the county $800,000, and when fully implemented will save the county about $16 million a year. We have done that working cooperatively with our department heads and with county employees. We have set a mission to keep our county fiscally strong, and we have been successful in doing that. Over the past several months, we've created hundreds of jobs in San Luis Obispo County, and in the coming few months, we'll add hundreds of more new jobs with projects that are underway in the county. We've worked cooperatively with the business community to develop an economic strategy, put that in place. We're about to adopt an economic element to the general plan that will set a course for the future of economic growth and development in San Luis Obispo County. In addition, during my tenure as supervisor, I have increased public participation at the county level in several ways. When I was first elected, we began an economic strategy at the Board of Supervisors where we have open public hearings to strategically look at our fiscal challenges in the county and also address planning issues in the public forum. I created a community advisory council in Creston to make those residents more accessible to county government. We've increased representation on the Agricultural Liaison Advisory Board as well as the Water Resources Advisory Council. We've put a number of infrastructure and policy actions in place in a number of the rural communities that I represent. We've also done strategic water planning throughout the county, which I'll address later on. Thank you.
Okay. I wanted you to get to clap at the very beginning, okay? And from now on, so we can be very efficient with our candidates' responses, we would like, as a panel, to just continue to move through the questions. They will each have 2 minutes, and then if either of them feels they need to follow up, they have that option. We look like we're going to get through about 14 to 15 questions in the next 50 minutes. If we're efficient. So I'm going to sit down. I appreciate all of you being very businesslike and cordial as we listen to both candidates respond. The first question, and my partners here are going to be asking after the first two or three that I ask, which are coming from our host, the Latino Outreach Council. So the first question, which will be answered by
opportunities open to everyone, and this success hinges, I believe, on good communication between the Board of Supervisors, between the Latino Outreach Council membership, and their aggressive participation in all of the various community advisory councils that we have. We have about 15 of them countywide. That opportunity is open to everyone. We have a number of specific advisory councils countywide. That opportunity is also open to everyone. So they do have an opportunity to engage on the ground floor.
Okay. Yes, thank you. I agree that the Latino business community should be worried about the same things that the entire business community is worried about right now, and that is that our county continues to raise the fees and the cost of doing business in the county. And that's for the folks that are trying to do business here as it is. People that might consider doing business here in the future and bringing jobs to the county are faced with uncertainty in the time of the permitting process and more costs to doing business in this county.
Thank you. The next question.
I'd like an opportunity to rebut. We do have a minute. Is that correct?
You have a minute. Thank you.
I just want to say that county government has, over the course of the last 3 years, because of the dire economic straits that everybody is facing, has done a number of things to lessen the burden on businesses. We've extended permitting periods. We've also deferred payment for permits and done those kinds of things to make it easier for people to establish businesses in San Luis Obispo and to function as business people in San Luis Obispo County.
Yes, Debbie, and I'll just say that climate action plan and the greenhouse gas emission threshold revisions and so forth have actually made it more expensive and more procedural to try to get permitted in this county. And when you're trying to run a small business in this county, and I know every time they ratchet up those fees, it hurts.
Thank you. Moving on to the next question. This question is also from the Latino Outreach Council. Could you each tell us about your involvement with the Latino community and how active have you been in Latino issues?
Start with Debbie.
And we start with to Debbie first.
All right. I haven't to date been involved with the Latino Outreach Council, but I have to say, and I think I mentioned early on that my family makes a living primarily in the agricultural business, and I've worked in the fields a lot with Latinos that are working in the county in the agricultural industry, and certainly do appreciate the hard work they're willing to do for us to provide food for you all. And also, as I get to know many of them out in the field, the family values and the culture that they share with my family.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you. I'm very well aware of the activities of the Latino Outreach Council, and I have worked with them over the past several years in a variety of ways. I've been active with a program that's related to the LOC. I believe they started the program, but it operates independently, and that's Vision Unida, which is a program that actually trains young people, primarily Latinos and Latinas, in leadership programs. And so I have supported them, supported their fundraisers, and sponsored them. Also, I'm a board member of the Community Action Partnership, formerly EOC. I've been a board member there for 7 years, and we work very closely with the Latino community through the Community Action Partnership, the Head Start program, and a variety of other programs that the Community Action Partnership sponsors.
Debbie, would you like to follow up?
Yes, and many of those opportunities have not been afforded me, as I have not held elected office, but I would look forward to those opportunities.
Thank you. Any other follow-up, Mr. Patterson? Thank you.
Okay, only to say you don't have to be in elected office to participate.
Next question. Our county, one of our largest industries, is agriculture, and it depends on agricultural workers to succeed, and yet many times housing for our farm worker families seems to be challenging. We don't have enough of it. Is there something, from both of your perspectives, that county government can do to assist in providing more housing for our agricultural workers and their families? And Jim?
Through our ordinance, we also have an inclusionary housing ordinance that, when fully implemented, will also provide additional workforce and affordable housing for residents income qualified in San Luis Obispo County. For the past 6 years, I've been working with the Workforce Housing Coalition, which is just that, a coalition of people in the industry and in government working to provide housing throughout the county and in cities to provide workforce and affordable housing. We advocate for projects that include affordable and workforce housing. We go to the various city councils and the Board of Supervisors, and we also go out into the community to service organizations and others to educate them about the importance of having affordable and available housing for our workforce in San Luis Obispo.
Thank you.
Absolutely. The agriculture in this county in this past year represented three-quarters of a billion dollars in farm commodity receipts. And the farm workers that come to work in the fields are absolutely make that happen. The county's economy depends on adequate housing for our farm workers and quality of life for our farm workers. I appreciate the programs that are in place to provide housing that's affordable for our farm workers. It's absolutely essential we have it, though I believe that many of the policies that have recently been put into place are going to make housing of all type less affordable, more expensive to build, and more expensive for the developers to build. If we can't, bring them into this equation, then the housing will be there'll be less housing available for our workers.
Any additional comments that you... Thank you, Debbie. Okay, I'm going to shift to Dr. Brescia, who's going to move into some probably educational questions.
Well, I'm looking at questions that the audience gave before my education. This first question... Sure.
Thank you.
The first question here...
Here.
Hello?
Go ahead.
The first question... On your thoughts on keeping the small town atmosphere and the friendliness and other aspects that you see present currently in the North County. And I believe, Ms. Arnold, you're first on this one.
Yes. I'm concerned about that, too. And I think a lot of people come to this area to live in our small towns, and they enjoy this rural environment. We've been very lucky. You know, our county, it has... amazingly beautiful natural resources, and we've been able to base our economy off of agriculture and the agritourism that people come here to enjoy our community. But the smart growth principles that have been enacted over the last 8 years are really designed, and the climate action plan and the conservation open space element to kind of change things around, and if those policies are enacted, we will start to see urbanization of our small towns, and that really does worry me.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you. I think the only thing worse than urbanization is sprawl. When you talk about preserving the rural character and quality of life that we have in San Luis Obispo County, there are 7 incorporated cities in San Luis Obispo County and about a dozen unincorporated communities, if you will. Some of those are even larger than the incorporated cities. And the county has no land use authority over the incorporated cities, so they're on their own. And what we can do and what we are trying to do is encourage development towards urbanized areas, communities and towns where services are available, where people aren't having to get in their cars and drive. And I think that we've got a long way to go there. We've been successful in implementing some policies to encourage that, but we absolutely want to maintain the rural character, the small towns, and you can't do that if you sprawl all over the landscape.
Rebuttal, Ms. Arnold?
Yep. Okay, and I agree about the sprawl. I am absolutely opposed to that. This county presently is somewhere between 2/3 and 3/4 preserved open space. We have many areas that are off limits. But when we talk development, development is from the small things to the big things. I think if people have in their mind development means residential tract homes out in our farmland, no. But when these restrictions that are being put on development actually affect our ability to build the processing facilities, it affects agriculture's ability to meet their needs. And again, the infill, I just don't think that the infill that is being set included the small village town of Creston. And it was just amazing. After months of the community coming together, they chose to make absolutely no changes to their lifestyle and their community. And I think a lot of us feel that way. This would be about protecting our rural way of life and protecting our small towns so that we can continue to enjoy them that way.
Heather's going to start.
All right. What is your vision for the county for the next 10 years? And can you please include your top 3 priorities?
Mr. Patterson.
in 2 minutes? Well, I see San Luis Obispo continuing down the road that we've actually followed for the past five. We have been successful in navigating the most severe economic downturn since the Great Depression, and we're coming out of that. We have a very small gap in our budget difference between revenue and income for fiscal year 12-13, and I think after that we'll start seeing an ability to invest in our county again. The last 5 years it's been a matter of basically hanging on, which we've done very successfully, and the Fitch AA plus rating indicates that, how well off we are economically compared to most counties in San Luis Obispo. My vision is to carry that on, to continue to grow, to continue to preserve our rural lifestyle, our natural resources, which we've done. The conservation and open space element, for example, has identified the natural resources that we have in this county. And we want to continue that and develop in a way that does not compromise our agricultural resources, enhances our tourist industry, creates jobs, and builds the economy here, because quality of life that we enjoy is a function of the economy, the environment, and the social attributes that we all enjoy now. And I want to continue to make that available for future generations. So my priorities are to continue that, to continue doing the water planning that's essential for appropriate growth in San Luis Obispo County. We're a water-stressed county, but we're moving forward. We just adopted a master water plan that identifies all the water resources in this county and the potential needs in the future. I want to continue that kind of activity.
Yes. One of my priorities would be to revive our economy and bring more job opportunities back. I think we were on just a great track. We had decided many years ago that we wanted clean industry in this county, and we had achieved that. We had encouraged our agricultural industry to thrive, and I think our biggest grown commodity, the wine grapes, didn't hurt anything on the tourism side of things, along with our beautiful natural resources. But lately, the regulatory climate has made it more difficult, and there is a lot of regulation. People that are ag tourism folks are either worried about being enacted, it's coming down the pike, and it stifles the motivation to try to expand your business, grow your business. I think people are just hoping for a little reprieve from some of the new and added regulation.
Yes, thank you. I mentioned earlier the economic strategy that we recently adopted at the Board of Supervisors. That was developed with over 100 members of the business community over a year, working with our planning department, with our county administration, a collection of businesses that has identified how we can build the economy going forward. And we are strong economically here. We need to expand beyond tourism and agriculture, and we are doing that. We're putting a program in place to encourage more head of household type jobs, good high paying jobs in this community, working with the business community countywide, and that is underway, and I intend to continue that effort moving forward.
Yes, I think that if we can become a business-friendly county, then the government doesn't need to. The business will come. Business will come here if they feel like they can pencil it out. This is a wonderful place to live, and more government intrusion is just restrictive to bringing business in.
Next question goes to Ms. Arnold.
Would you support cutting funding for public education, such as K-12 and the community colleges? And at the same time, what county-level efforts do you support to improve the quality of K-12 education?
The question, would I support cutting our
to public education, K-12? It's been cut too much already, in my opinion. And things that the county can do. And remember that schools are actually regulated by their own district boards of trustees. The county doesn't have a lot of direct influence over the education system, but we can partner with schools, which we have done successfully, to facilitate their ability to provide education to our children. And I maintain a close contact with Dr. Crocker at the County Office of Education, and we do a variety of things for our local schools within our district. I've worked very hard with various principals and the district superintendents on Safe Routes to School projects, and also just recently we enhanced a school crossing down in Santa Margarita that's been a safety problem for years, working directly with the schools. So there are things that we can do. We also work with Cuesta College in the nursing program and provide opportunities to the county for nursing students to train and further their education through county medical opportunities.
Ms. Arnold, 1 minute.
Yes, I believe that a vibrant economy is the best way to, again, restore funding for our public school system, and I think that we all have a responsibility to try to make that happen.
Any additional comments, Mr. Patterson?
Okay, I'm going to ask now. A couple of land use or planning, which is not my area, so I'm going to read them very carefully. And this question goes to Mr. Patterson first. The developers of Eagle Ranch want to exceed the historical 452 lots deeded by Mr. E.G. Lewis. Do you support or oppose this?
Whether I support it or oppose it, it exists. The Eagle Ranch was developed when the colony was founded in 1913. There are 452 legal lots of record out there. The question is whether or not that should be annexed into the city, and there's a number of questions about whether that's a good idea. Personally, I do think it's a good idea, simply because it could develop now over about 3,500 acres as it's platted. They could sell those lots off and develop them as they are with very little environmental review. It can just happen. Atascadero Mutual Water Company has planned to serve that development, and I think it's best designed and integrated into the community if it is annexed into Atascadero. Because of its location, the city of Atascadero would provide emergency services anyway, because county services are too far away and mutual aid would have the city of Atascadero responding. The owner of that project has already had, over the past year or so, a number of community meetings seeking input on how that project should develop. Currently, they're planning about 13 miles of public accessible trails throughout that project, clustered development that would provide a variety of housing types, which we desperately need in Atascadero as well as the county. It's strategically located, I think, to have a variety of housing types there. They're also anticipating small commercial development there as well to help fund the cost of services for Eagle Ranch. So there's a lot more planning to do. I've worked with the planners and the owners as well as the neighbors on this project, and it'll be at least 5 years before they ever turn a spade of soil, and the estimated build-out is 25 years.
Yes. The Eagle Ranch, as Supervisor Patterson pointed out, those are colony lots that were granted years before any of us were born, and those lots are there, and they'll be built on. But what I understand from the neighbors is that they do have concerns about, once again, this high density policy that our county's enacted that would create an urban section of living over in that area. They're concerned about traffic, and they're concerned about the additional density. What we saw happen up in Templeton when the community wanted to maintain their small town rural atmosphere is the county mandated that the project that's designed for this where the livestock market is today be built with more density than what was originally proposed. And I know that's become a concern of the folks that...
So I support them moving forward, working with the city, and that's been my position all along, that they really need to work with the city to develop it. The density is a function of the plan that the city comes up with and approves. And so it's not a given. You know, that's yet to be determined. And yes, traffic's a problem, potentially, but that should all get sorted out. And traffic would be a problem now if they just went in and cut that ranch up into 452 pieces and sold them off and built houses on them.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes. There are steps that need to be taken before this property is annexed into the city, and I think that it's important that the county work with the city. The annexation is still in question, and what the cost to the city, I'm sure, will be of concern to them when they work this out. Right now it sits in the county, and right now county policies do influence how this project will play out. So I encourage anyone that's interested in how the Eagle Ranch is developed to make your voice heard.
Thank you. Shifting to a couple of healthcare questions, we all know healthcare is a challenging arena right now. What do you believe is the role of the county? This is more of a specific question. What is the role of the county, from your opinion, in providing for women's health services?
Ms. Arnold, 2 minutes.
Okay. The county's role in providing for women's health services. Well, the county's work with the community health centers. I think there is a variety of opportunity for women to, find and seek out adequate health care. I think our county's worked really hard, and when I was around working for the county when a big change was made, and that change was that the General Hospital was closed down and the community health centers took over the responsibility for providing health care. And I'm talking about, I mean, we do have doctors in the county, plenty of them, but if women are seeking out assistance from the county in helping with this health care, the community health centers were picked up that responsibility that General Hospital once held. It is important, though, that, and I know there's been some friction lately between the county and CHC, but important to fulfill the promises that were made just less than a decade ago to the citizens of this county and be sure that those health centers are funded and providing adequate opportunity.
Thank you. Patterson, 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. The county has a legal mandate, really, to take care of all citizens that are unable to take care of themselves, basically. And we provide that through the community health centers, a system of clinics that operate throughout this county as well as Santa Barbara County. Specifically for women, we have an advisory group called the Commission on the Status of Women who can advise the Board of Supervisors if there are deficiencies in services available to women. We also have a health commission, which serves that same role to address health concerns for all residents of the County of San Luis Obispo. And there are a number of other programs that we support that are specifically geared towards women. The Community Action Partnership, for example, has a variety of programs that are specifically addressed for women. And we want to continue to support Community Action Partnership and those programs financially. And if there is a deficiency, we in service available to women or anyone else, we do rely on the Health Commission to advise us of that so we can react appropriately. And specifically for women, again, we have the Commission on the Status of Women who meet monthly to address issues specifically impacting women.
Ms. Arnold, yes. 1 minute.
Thank you. I was involved with those commissions when I was a legislative assistant to the former supervisor, and so I do know that they provide invaluable input, but there are so many of our citizens that are busy, they're working, they're raising their families that don't participate in some of these daytime meetings of these various commissions. So I think it's really important that the county maintain the opportunities, and I'll circle back when our economy is flourishing in general, the funding.
Unfortunately, because of the economic downturn, the federal government and the state government are reducing funding to a number of programs, and one specifically addressing children's needs are the ones that are most painful. A couple of things. First Five is a program that addresses special needs of infants up through 5 years old, hence the name First Five. Gets a tremendous amount of its funding from the state. Other programs, as Ms. Steinberg mentioned, do have reduced funding, and we do maintain a level of service available through the community health centers. We fund them every year in the millions of dollars to provide funding for people who can't afford it. If they can't afford it, the county picks it up. Also, we have a lobbyist in both Washington, D.C. and in Sacramento that works with us on securing legislation that will ensure funding to these programs that are impacting children. There's another program called Clínica de Tolosa, which provides dental care for children, infants, and, well, you have to have teeth, obviously, but for young children, and that's a program that we also support and encourage. But we're doing everything we can through the community health centers to ensure that those that need adequate health care, including dental care, receive it.
Ms. Arnold, 2 minutes.
Yes, we do have some wonderful programs in the county, and we have a lot of compassionate people who understand that our children here in this county do need adequate dental and health care. I'm very proud to say that I've been endorsed and supported by my good friend, Dr. Rene Bravo, who's dedicated his life to the children and children's health in this county. I keep up with some of the things. In fact, as I said before, I spent several years working for Assemblyman Sam Blakesley and now Senator Sam Blakesley, and at all levels of government, our revenues in California and in the county are shrinking. And here we go again, but I'm going to circle back. We need to turn and focus on reviving our economy so that we will be able to restore funding for these vital services and maintain and improve the quality of life for all the people in San Luis Obispo County.
Mr. Patterson, 1 minute.
Yes, thank you. One of the emphasis in the program that we have for children is parental education. And part of the community health centers, as well as Clínica de Tolosa, they put a lot of energy and effort, as well as public action or community action partnership, in educating parents about nutrition and proper health for their children, including dental hygiene. And they're making an effort to reduce the incidence of illness, obesity, and dental problems. And we need to keep that focus. We need to really put the energy and effort into continuing the education program for parents so we don't get into medical and dental needs for their children.
Arnold, 1 minute.
Yes, I just want to stress again, government can play a role in family health, children's health, and family education, but I think the real key is to improve improve our economic stability in this county so that we have the money to fund these programs and help the people that need the assistance.
All right, continuing on the topic of children, public support for child care services has been drastically cut over the last few years. Do you believe that there is a role for counties to provide child care services, and if so, how should they be provided?
Ms. Arnold, 2 minutes.
Yes, because I was in that business for 17 years, and I actually worked with EOC, I understand, you know, I had a preschool here in Atascadero from 1982 until 2000. We had a waiting list. It was constant. And I believe, still a need. I haven't had small children in a little while, but for quality child care, as we know, many families need two incomes to make ends meet, and child care is very important to these families. But there's been a shortage for many years and continues to be a shortage. And as far as paying for it, again, I know that there are programs, there are grants, but those are all shrinking. And we continually talk about government stepping in and helping, but the funds need to be there or we're just not going to be able to pay for all these programs. And in strong economic
capacity and maximum efficiency. And many institutions and businesses recognize the need for child care services and provide those services for their respective employees and customers. Cuesta College, Cal Poly, a number of large businesses do that already. And we could work with the educational institutions that are training young men and women in child care services, child development, that sort of thing, to expand programs where we can, and encourage businesses to also offer child care services, which some currently do. And I wouldn't, again, embark on a path to develop child care services funded and operated by the County of San Luis Obispo. I would look to augmenting programs that are already in existence and helping them be more successful in what they do.
Ms. Arnold, 1 minute.
Yes. Cuesta and Cal Poly offering child care and providing child care services, those are public businesses. But the private sector, again, this is all, I mean, the cost of doing business, they first have to have their business thriving before private sector business will be able to provide those services. And it was my experience that our public agencies and EOC especially, they were running very efficiently. The problem was there just was a shortage of available child care. And I know it's an ongoing problem.
Mr. Patterson, 1 minute response? No? Okay. Okay, I have an education question from our county superintendent's office. This is regarding the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments consideration, but non-adoption of the countywide sales tax increase to fund improvements and enhancements in public transportation. What is your position about allocating funds to reduce the cost of school transportation, which this tax initiative had tied on in a countywide tax measure to improve transportation?
Okay, let me try to paraphrase that a little bit. That was about a four-sentence question, I think. The question is about appropriating funding for school transportation from the Council of Government and adopting a sales tax initiative to do that specifically?
Correct.
Okay. Let me first say quickly that five of the seven incorporated cities in San Luis Obispo County have already adopted a sales tax increment. Paso Robles is seriously considering doing just that. Current state legislation requires that in order for the county, unincorporated area, to adopt a sales tax increment, we have to include the entire county, including the incorporated cities. So we've had this conversation at the Council of Governments a number of times, and feel that since a number of cities have already done that, to add another increment on top of that, which would be required by state law, is very unlikely to pass. It's also extremely expensive to carry on an initiative like that. I am on the Council of Governments. I do think that transportation for school-age children is really critical. Templeton, for example, has cut it out completely, putting an additional burden on parents, as well as increasing traffic congestion, but they just simply don't have the money to provide it. I have worked with the former superintendent of Atascadero Unified School District and our regional transit authority to provide transportation for students in Atascadero that live beyond the area that is currently served by transportation, by school transportation. But I don't think adding an incremental sales tax to the county is even feasible.
Ms. Arnold, 2 minutes.
Yes. As a working mother in a rural area, I depended for many years on public school transportation. My children rode the bus, but so I appreciate that availability. But a sales tax now is going to further burden economic recovery in the county. I do believe my opponent supported supported SOCOG spent approximately $280,000 studying whether or not a sales tax would be received and if the citizens here would vote favorably if it was on the ballot, and I believe the polling I saw showed that no, the citizens here in the county, not another tax, not another sales tax coming from another agency. So I think that the relief for schools, school districts in providing budgeted into our county budget, and again, as the pie has shrunk, so has the money's going to the various departments. But the county does play a role. It's part of, you know, our county public health program, should continue to play a role. And again, if we can get things going, more money will be in each one of these pots to provide better and more adequate service in the drug and alcohol arena.
Mr. Patterson, 2 minutes.
Drug and alcohol services is a division of our health agency, and we do provide services countywide, albeit not enough. We just recently, with funding from the state as part of the public safety realignment, AB 109, added additional drug and alcohol counselors to the staff to address issues out at county jail involving drug and alcohol, but we need to support programs that are funded through other entities, and there are a number of nonprofits that provide these services already. We need to support them, which we have. There's a program here in Atascadero, in fact, called North County Connection that provides services to people with addictions, and we have helped fund that program, and I think that's actually the best use of limited county resources now, are to again augment services that do exist out there and bring in additional funding from both the public and private sector. But again, we do have a drug and alcohol services division within the health agency that's funded and offering services countywide, and we absolutely do need to continue to provide those services.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold?
It is a priority for county government.
1 minute.
There are successful nonprofits in the county that deal with drug and alcohol rehabilitation, and North County Connection is one, operated by a very close, long-time friend of mine, Sue Warren, and I have donated time or volunteered time there to work with Sue. AB 109 that Jim mentioned is actually a sad thing that our county has not prioritized funding enough, that they are now sending our state prisoners into our county jails, and so the need for these new jobs has been created by the county. It's just another burden that we're going to have to deal with at the county level that was and should still be part of the state's responsibility.
Any additional comments, Mr. Patterson?
No, I've I do hope that we have time in the remaining 55 minutes to speak to AB 109. We have implemented that. That's a public safety realignment act, and we have had good success so far with that, support from Sheriff Parkinson, Probation Chief Salio, as well as from our mental health department and our drug and alcohol services. We are managing that program well with funding from the state, and it's been very positive so far. It's been in place about 8 months now, and I did talk with Deputy Chief Salio and Sheriff Parkinson just within the last week, and they both feel that it's moving very smoothly, and they hold high hopes for it. The question becomes whether or not we'll continue to get state funding for that program, and that remains to be seen. Also, recently the grand jury issued their annual report on conditions out at CMC, and they said since AB 109 was adopted, conditions have improved dramatically out at CMC.
Do I get 1 minute?
No, you each had the minute, I believe.
Okay. So, changing topic once again, what is your vision on how to end homelessness in our county?
Mr. Patterson, 2 minutes.
Well, that's a good question. San Luis Obispo County did adopt a 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. I don't know that we'll ever end it completely because there are people that seem to enjoy that lifestyle, frankly. That's what I'm told. But we have three regional programs in San Luis Obispo County. We have El Camino Homeless Organization, ECHO, here in Atascadero. We've got Community Action Partnership with their programs centrally located in San Luis Obispo, and we have a new program down in the South County, the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, and they are all working actively to address it by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, who fund homeless programs. And so we're getting it together so we can continue to increase our funding to help the homeless population.
Ms. Arnold, 2 minutes.
Okay. I have to say that, it's been 8 years ago or so working for the prior supervisor. We were working then on providing a homeless shelter in the North County here, and still all these many years later, that hasn't quite been accomplished. I understand that homelessness is an important issue in the county. I was really happy to see that a more creative program, but I actually volunteered just the other day to go down and work with Polly House at the Sunny Acres, and that apparently is going to be brought up to code so that there is a homeless population that, and that's a private a partnership. But the one thing that has perplexed me, and maybe Jim can speak more to this, is why social services at the county level has hired a homeless coordinator when it's my belief that CAPSLO has been working and working on the homeless issue for a long, long time. And in other words, why are we reinventing the wheel when we already have underfunded agencies that are trying to do their best to tackle that issue?
Well, as I mentioned, the rules that the Housing and Urban Development Department at the federal level have really, really tighten the requirements on data collection and monitoring. And if we don't do that, we're going to lose funding for our homeless program. And Ms. Arnold mentioned that not much has been done in the 8 years since she was at county government, but she obviously doesn't know what has happened. We do have programs in place. Both ECHO's expanding significantly here. They're moving forward with purchasing their facility and hopefully ultimately providing housing as well as just emergency shelter and meals. Community Action Partnership, the county has donated a parcel of land in San Luis Obispo for them to build a larger shelter that would combine both day services and emergency shelter and expand the capacity as well as provide case management. You have to have You have to have case management if you're going to move people out of homelessness, and that's what we've been focusing on. South County is doing the same thing, so we've made tremendous progress in just the last couple of years.
Arnold, 1 minute.
Yes, I just want to clarify that what I was talking about was plans for a homeless shelter in the North County, and I have friends that are very involved with ECHO, and I know they're trying desperately to be able to finance a facility, and I hope that that works out. I'm just saying it's taken a very, very long time, and money's tight, and it seems like consolidating efforts would be more efficient.
I would like to ask a question as you both focused on the homelessness. Just one more time on affordable housing. How, in your vision for these next 10 years that you both commented on, what would you hope could be some of the solutions so that our homeless shelter opportunities right now, in 10 years, where do you see the affordable housing dream that many of us have, as do you, happening within San Luis Obispo County?
Ms. Arnold, 2 minutes.
Biz, you're asking where we envision it happening or how we envision it?
Will we increase the affordable housing stock?
Okay, and I think that is in the, builders right now pay in lieu fees, and a portion of every permit, if you will, goes towards the construction of affordable housing so that it can be subsidized. It is a there's a high cost to live here. We all know that, supply and demand, but the county for a long time has had the vision to subsidize so that the all-important affordable housing for the quality of life, for all to enjoy the quality of life here in the county can be met. And I expect that will continue, and that is the answer. The problem is when there's no building going on, then there's no in-lieu fees, and there's no affordable housing being built either.
Mr. Patterson, 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you. I think the county's worked on this fairly aggressively. Our single largest source of affordable housing in San Luis Obispo County is mobile home parks. And we adopted an ordinance a couple of years ago to protect mobile home parks so they're not dismantled and utilized for something to have affordable housing. We also have an inclusionary housing ordinance, which I spoke to recently. It was just adopted a couple of years ago. We haven't implemented it yet because of the downturn in the economy and its impact on the building industry, but it's not something that's subsidized. Builders are given additional density to build affordable units in their projects. So it isn't all on their nickel.
And there's that density that I'm saying will change our rural small town lifestyle here. But I also just want to mention that I did not see our supervisors lobbying the governor when he took away the redevelopment funds that I know, at least in Atascadero, were an important part of the affordable housing plan. So I think maybe part of what we can do as a county government is just to lobby and network at the state and federal level to help fund these projects.
Mr. Patterson, 1 minute.
Yeah, actually, I did write a letter supporting the use of the redevelopment agency funding for affordable housing, specifically for San Luis Obispo County. We lost over $1 million in San Luis Obispo County because of redevelopment money being taken away that would have gone to affordable housing. And I was not supportive of that, of taking that money away. I think we should keep it. There's still an effort afoot in Sacramento. We're working through the Workforce Housing Coalition to lobby for legislation that will put money back in the communities for affordable housing, and it's imperative that we have opportunities for the workforce to live in San Luis Obispo County if we want a diverse population, which I absolutely do think creates a life, not just a lifestyle, but a living environment that's inclusive and diverse. And you need diverse housing in order to provide that.
Thank you.
Did they each do their 1 minute?
Yes,
because I lost track.
No, yeah,
thank you, Jim. You have been a fantastic audience up to now, too. Thank you for your patience. Thank you both. We are going to take our 10-minute break to try to get as many more questions from all of you answered that are sitting here. So we all have our watches set at different times because some of us are 5 minutes early, some of us are, you know, whatever. 10 minutes from whatever your clock says right now. Thank you very much. Find your seats, and we will complete the last half hour of the forum. Thank you. The next three questions are representative of a number of folks' questions around these three topic areas. Then we believe we will have one very comprehensive closing question before our candidates do their actual closing. So, Jim, do you want to go with the first question?
Sure. Okay, I've got an easy one for you that came from out in the hallway, and I promised to include the group out there. You can't hear me? I'm sorry. This is a fairly straightforward question. Goes to Mr. Patterson. Approximately how many hours per week do you think a county supervisor needs to put in to their job?
Well, I don't know. I've put in probably an average of 60, and oftentimes significantly more than that, and there's more than I can do. And I tell people that if you're committed to this job, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle, and you just do it. And fortunately, when I ran in 2004 and took office in 2005, I did the job because I think we live in an absolutely wonderful place. There's a lot of work to be done. I knew that when I took the job, and I really appreciate the opportunity, and I think that we're doing good things there. You hear a lot about over-regulation. Well, we'll get to that before the night's over because it isn't happening. We have one of the best functioning counties in the state of California.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold?
Yes. I did have the opportunity, as I said before, to work as a legislative assistant to a former county supervisor. So Jim's right, I think, when he says it'll take as much time as you have to give it. We have a wonderful county and a diverse county, but a lot of issues. And I think that I'm really excited that my experience working with the Assembly, the State Assembly, and Senator Blakeslee, and the networking that I've been able to develop over the last 8 years, and the knowledge of the governmental process at the state and federal level would help me be able to even be more efficient in lobbying for our county's needs and in working towards good things for all the people here in San Luis Obispo County.
Mr. Patterson, any rebut? Okay. I now get on to a little trickier question here. This one was on your comments and opinions on the recent controversy regarding the plastic bags in our county. And I'll start off with Ms. Arnold.
Okay. I was really surprised when the Integrated Waste Management Authority, the IWMA, regulated. The Integrated Waste Management Authority, not every county has them, but our county developed our IWMA in response to a government mandate that we limit the amount of trash that we were putting into our landfill back in the late 80s. We complied. We complied with that state mandate in short order. And when I was working in the county board for County Board of Supervisors, the IWMA's main function seemed to be providing recycling opportunities and recycling education. What surprised me about the regulation coming out of that board is that very few citizens, this was rather high profile, so more people are aware of the IWMA now, but I didn't ever remember them regulating. And I think that that is something that surprised people, that the government was regulating from a more regional board, that we're starting to see a trend towards this. It's difficult, I think, for the average citizen who's going to work, raising their family, doing what they do during the day, to follow multiple boards. I think a lot of us are used to trying to pay attention to what our Board of Supervisors is passing, but I'm sure that I wasn't the only one that was surprised by legislation coming out of this board. And what particularly alarmed me was that the ordinance ended in the words, you know, if you don't comply with having the signage at a certain place, you could be, a retailer could be fined or jailed. So there we go. I don't think that is the way to help our retailers comply. And again, government intrusion into the free marketplace, those decisions should be made by the consumer.
Mr. Patterson, 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you. The regulation of single-use plastic carry-out bags has been something that's been debated for many years, both in Sacramento and locally. In fact, the local IWMA has had it on and off its agenda for discussion since 2006. And the Integrated Waste Management Authority consists of the 5 supervisors, a representative from each of the 7 incorporated cities, and a representative from the special districts, California special districts. So there are 13 members. And if it was a surprise to people, it's the responsibility of the representative from each of the cities to take it back and keep their citizenry informed of activities of the IWMA, which is a joint powers authority to implement AB 939, which is the legislation that Ms. Arnold mentioned that was adopted in 1989, to divert trash from landfills. Landfills were filling up throughout the from throughout the state. The plastic bag ordinance is this. We are having severe environmental problems as a result of single-use plastic bags, and those are just the carry-out bags that you get at the checkout stand. Many markets and other retailers don't even use those anymore. Trader Joe's, Costco, for example, we all pay for them, for people to use them as a convenience. What did people do before there were plastic bags? They're polluting the landscape, they're polluting the marine environment, killing marine animals, and they're expensive. We're all paying for it, whether we use them or not. And the
job can be done with consumer choice and education, but I think the bigger picture is we need to be aware of this trend. Your voice is being diluted. If you live in an incorporated city, you have one vote out of 13, and that's no longer local control.
Any additional response?
Local entities can not participate with the IWMA if they so choose, but it would be an expensive effort because they still have to implement the state mandate, and it's better done collectively. And I want to tell you that this ordinance had the support of the businesses that utilize them. The Grocers Association of California were supportive of it. It's better for the consumer. If you don't use them, you don't pay. pay, and it's problematic for the waste haulers. It creates litter. It gums up their recycling machines at the landfill. They were supportive of it, and it's impactful to the environment. And as an elected official, I think that it's our responsibility that when we see a problem, we address it. There are 1.2 million estimated plastic single-use carry-out bags distributed in San Luis Obispo County every year. Approximately 5 or 6% get recycled. The rest of them end up in the waterways, along the roadside, in the landfill, and they're extremely problematic. And if you have a choice, the consumer has a choice, you can use a paper bag, or you can take a carry-out bag, which I've been doing for the last 10 years. It works just fine. Trader Joe's flourishes without plastic bags. So does Costco.
Great. Thanks. Next. Yeah. Yeah, they didn't hear about the applause out there. It's the ball game.
Well, I'm going to change the subject again. So in San Luis County, we're one of the not reading it right. So San Luis County is currently one of the few counties in the state that has no vector control district. And the mosquitoes in Atascadero are really bad right now. Now, what do you think can be done, if anything, to in relation to mosquito abatement in our county?
Mr. Patterson.
Who's first? Oh, I'm first. Okay. Vector control district. I got a phone message yesterday from somebody who said there's too many mosquitoes in the county. Do something about it. And the whole mosquito issue has been apparently I voted to do to ban mosquitoes or something. And basically what we were talking about several years ago was whether or not to create a vector control district, which would cost homeowners about $9 a year. It was brought to us, to the Board of Supervisors, by the Environmental Health Department suggesting that we do that. They came with this huge budget and program. I voted not to send them back, revise it, downsize it a little bit, and then come back again, which they did several months later. I voted to allow the people of San Luis Obispo County to vote on whether or not they wanted a vector control district. It's not just about mosquitoes. It's about ticks. It's about rodents. It's about anything that might carry a disease organism and transmit it to people or livestock. And the residents of San Luis Obispo County said, we don't want to have an assessment on our property to form a vector control district, so we didn't do that. It was simple as that. I believe in democracy. I believe people ought to have an opportunity to vote on something like this where they're being taxed. We did that. The voters spoke, we don't want to do it. If we have a problem, we'll have to fund it out of the general fund. At the time this came forward, we were downsizing departments to try to close our budget gap at the time. And that was one of the programs that was at risk of being cut and has been cut. And should we have a problem, we'll have to respond to it. But we'll have to respond using contingency money and money that hasn't been budgeted for that program simply because, you know, we heard the voters that we're not going to create the vector control district, which, as was mentioned in the question, most of the surrounding counties of San Luis Obispo do have them in place. We're talking $9 a year.
Yes, the vector control a vector control district is an assessment district where property owners are assessed on their property tax, and a single parcel at $9. Many of our rural landowners have multiple parcels. You see them as one big parcel, but they would have been paying multiple hundreds of dollars. This is another. It would have been another tax on business folks in our county. Prior to that, though, the county, our county didn't have an assessment district, but it was budgeted and it was part of our budget every year to have a vector control situation. They have decided to downsize that, but that's prioritizing our budget money at the county. All those ballots would vote yes, that we did want an assessment district, another tax on our county property owners.
Yeah, a benefit district is an assessment district. In order to create one, you have to have the people who have defined benefit from that vote on it. And in the case of the vector control district, the base and why you have a study and why you hire a consultant, you do that with any kind of district. You have to assess how much benefit a given parcel would get. And it was a homeowner or a residence that was $9. If you had rural property with a home on it, it was $9, and then it was 25 cents an acre, I think, was the additional assessment. So it wasn't hundreds or thousands of dollars, except for maybe the Hearst Corporation, somebody like that. But the point is that the people said, we don't want that assessment. We'll deal with the consequences of not having it. And that's what we did. But unless you take it to the people, then you don't know.
Any additional response? 1 minute.
Well, I was sorry to see that the county has not maintained the vector control program that they had in place before. It has limited that. And I do think that that is one area. It's very difficult to control all the mosquitoes in this county. We need to take responsibility. I think horse owners, if you're out there in the audience, such as myself, we know we have to vaccinate our animals to protect them from the biggest concern has been West Nile virus, and that which we are... Mosquitoes are a carrier of that on wet years. We vaccinate our horses. We can be responsible on our own property for not leaving pools and puddles and containers of water lying around. And I think that we can do the best. We, the people, can do the best in reducing incidences of West Nile, which we haven't had, just by being cautious, same as using sunscreen and other health precautions that we take in our everyday lives.
This next question, is our best approach from a few people having it? So I'm going to read the most cogent one for both of you to consider. What is your take on the county's new plan to limit building permits in the rural areas of the county while severely increasing density in the unincorporated urban reserve line areas? In parentheses, Napomo, Oceano, San Miguel, Templeton. And the questioners are quoting the April 25th, San Luis Obispo County Library meeting.
Ms. Arnold?
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't in attendance at that meeting, but I do know that the limiting building permits in the rural areas. And again, when we talk about building permits, we're not talking about tracts of homes. We're talking about building permits that can affect rural homeowners' expansions, improvements, and possibly processing for some of our agricultural commodities. So that makes it really difficult. Encouraging the high density in the towns, again, it's my opinion that most people enjoy the small town atmosphere and the rural lifestyle here, so I would not be in favor of that. But limiting those permits in the outer areas is part of the smart growth, strategic growth agenda. And right now, 2005, when these policies were voted in, it's years and years later when the counties decided to kind of assess the economic impact that will have on these rural property owners. If you own property out in the rural area and then suddenly there are no building permits or they're very difficult or more expensive to get, there go your plans. What were you planning to do with that property, or should you need to do something with that property? So... I'm just amazed that it's taken 7 years after a policy to reduce building permits in the rural areas before the economic consequences have been considered.
Mr. Patterson, 2 minutes.
Yeah, I attended the first part of that meeting, and what it was the beginning of an assessment of the economic impacts of urbanizing, basically, growth as opposed to rural development. And we all know that servicing rural development is far more expensive than the income you receive from the property taxes on that rural development. It's becoming more and more expensive to provide emergency services, maintain the in urbanized areas where services and resources are available. When you develop in the rural area, you're putting more traffic on the road, you're putting residents out in the agricultural and open space areas that do adversely impact the rural character of San Luis Obispo County. And so you need to manage that in some way, and we're in the process of studying that.
Yep. So, again, we have an economy here in this county that is based on agriculture, based on ag tourism, and whether we have the folks living in town and driving to their job on these agricultural entities or the other way around, it's these policies of the county are kind of more of a cookie-cutter community planning situation that I don't think fits this county, trying to drive residential living into urban dense, more an urban dense situation, and not take into consideration, make it more difficult, and basically penalize folks that live out in these rural areas. And I can tell you that, we chose our lifestyle, and we chose the way we want to make our living, but it is more expensive. It already is. We pay for fuel, wear and tear in our trucks, and so forth and so on. And But that's how we make our living, and I think that if we're going to continue basing our economy, we need to take rural areas into consideration.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Again, I want to emphasize that it's zoning that determines the kind of development that can occur anywhere, and zoning is a part of the general plan. And the general plan is developed and updated periodically, and all the elements of the general plan are developed and updated periodically through a very rigorous public process. And as I mentioned earlier, we have 15 rural community advisory councils. There's the Planning Commission. There's the Board of Supervisors. All of that process is part of developing the kind of environment that you want to live in, whether it be a community urbanized environment or in the rural landscape. The zoning isn't changing out there. If you have rural property and you want to build farm worker housing to provide housing for the people that work in your vineyard or at your winery, you can do that. That's allowable. We're not talking about stopping that.
Heather's going to ask our last question.
Are there any policy areas where you might cast a vote that is beneficial to the entire county but goes against your own personal views or that of your political base?
Me?
Yes, Mr.
Okay.
Yes,
well, I was told by a seasoned elected official when I decided to run that I was going to lose friends and I was going to gain friends. And I've experienced that over the last 7 years. And people have expectations that you're going to do certain things a certain way. And if that doesn't happen, they get disappointed, and it's unfortunate. But I use the Carrizo Plain solar projects as an example where some very hardcore environmentalists thought it was absolutely wrong thing to do. And my personal feeling, even though I have a great affinity for the Carrizo Plains, I've been going there for the last 30 years for a variety of reasons. I was skeptical at first, and I thought maybe there was a better place to put those plants. But in working with the resource agencies over the years and knowing what the resource issues were out there, I felt that we could have both, and we'd get the benefit of all the jobs those plants created. And I remember when the Arco solar plants were out there, and they were picked up and moved, and you'd never know they were there. And 25, 30 years from now, the same thing's going to happen with these lands. And we preserved 12,000 acres for habitat in the process. So I think it was a winning proposition, but I lost friends over that, and I don't regret the decision I made. And I make my decisions based on what I think is in the best interest of the county currently and generations of people coming behind us. And we need to have a bigger and broader perspective. And, you know, I don't have an agenda. I don't have a special interest except that when I graduated from Cal Poly, I was able to stay here and buy property, build a home, raise my family. And I want other people to have that opportunity, too. We shouldn't limit that. And that's the philosophy that I use, the measure that I use in evaluating projects and policies when I make decisions.
Yes, thank you. So the question that Heather posed was something that I would do for the good of the county that may go against. Well, it's very important for us to have a marketing opportunity locally, and the Templeton Livestock Market that's been in operation for years and years is where we go and take our cattle to sell. And they're friends of ours, but the Davis family has owned and operated that livestock market for many years. Because it's zoned downtown Templeton, they had the ability to develop that into single-family residences. They did, and now they're going into phase two, where it will eliminate our livestock market. Very devastating to all of us cattle producers, yet the cattlemen themselves, in the interest of what's good for the county and what's good for the right to own property, property rights in general, chose to support that project to be built. So thank you. Quick example.
Yes, thank you. I want to point out that, you know, we live in a democracy, and it's a participatory democracy, and we all have a stake in what happens. And I think that we provided great opportunity. I know I've made every effort, and that's one of the reasons I ran. I felt like my predecessor had no presence in the North County, never saw him, and didn't have office hours, wasn't accessible, and if you had an opinion different than his, he really wasn't interested in hearing it. But we need to engage in the process, and the outcome is not always going to be what we would like it to be, but we need to make the decisions for the right reasons, and I try, in fact, I do state why I vote the way I do, and I believe it's the process that we all participate in, and the general plan, and the zoning, and the design of our communities, that's all public. And we develop that with public input, and then that's what I'm charged with implementing, and that's what I try to do.
Well, gosh, I take exception to the fact that I did provide constituent service to the 5th District during those years, so I hope that people felt like they were being served, but I also have great respect for the democracy, and but the one thing I understand, having worked most of my life in the private sector, it is difficult to always be able to engage at all the hearings. So for that reason, I do agree that your supervisor needs to be very, very accessible, and I think the changes and the additional regulation need to be really vetted out. Things need to slow down so that the government is responding to the wishes of the people and the people aren't being dictated to by the county government.
Thank you both. We are now at the stage of our forum for your closing statements of 3 minutes. And on this, we will begin with Mr. Patterson.
Yes. Thank you all for being here tonight. I appreciate your paying as close attention as you all are riveted to the front table here. I just want to say that over the past 7-plus years, I've done what I said I would do when I ran for office in 2004 and again in 2008. We've had great successes. No one knew that the economy was going to fall off a cliff, and our county has managed that better than most counties in the state of California. We have a cooperative government working together, the elected officials and our administration. We have a lot of new people in our administration. The economy in San Luis Obispo County is doing extremely well, much better than the state, and I think that'll continue. We've built alliances with the business community here to put an economic strategy in place that will let us continue to grow economically. One of the things that was deficient when I took office is we hadn't updated our conservation and open space element in 35 years. We don't even know at the time, we didn't know what we had here in this county. And people come here because of the rural nature and the environmental quality that we all enjoy here. And I pressed to get that conservation open space element updated so we would know what we were dealing with. And that's been adopted, and it's a wonderful document. It is not regulation. It is simply an inventory of what we have and how to protect it. And we've had great successes working with the communities and in the district that I represent, Santa Margarita. We've put in a new water system and done flood control measures. That community used to flood every year. There was heavy rainfall, and we've worked together as a community to address those issues. We have a new fire station in Creston that will be opening soon. California Valley, we've increased the fire service at our new fire station out there. And in Atascadero, we've worked very hard to relocate and expand the library and keep county offices in Atascadero that were destined to move to
Along with the strategic growth policies, along with the climate action plan, the fugitive dust rule, the plastic bag ban, et cetera, thousands of pages of regulation that I believe are detrimental to an economic recovery here in this county. So I hear my opponent speaking to how county government has responded to a downturn in the economy, and my goal is to try to work towards reviving that economy so that funding can be restored for all the services we discussed earlier in the evening. I know that the board has talked about having an $83 million surplus in their county budget, but you know, including the Los Osos project that is online, our San Luis Obispo County will have over $1 billion in bonded debt. So our citizens here are carrying a pretty heavy debt load, and I think that it's just vital that we do all we can to revive private sector economy so that we will be able to thrive and pay for all these obligations that we have in each community. Now, I want to be clear that it is my intent to protect our environment with sensible laws, and I'm not just solely a supervisor that's only concerned with economics. We talked briefly this evening about AB 109, and I'm saying that I think that that is a result of our state not being able to prioritize our state revenues to provide adequate safety. I am very happy that even with the challenges of AB 109, which will bring state prisoners into our local county jails that were never built to house that level of prisoners, even with those challenges that we're facing right now, the Deputy Sheriff's Association has endorsed me and have the confidence in me to make that endorsement, I'm really happy about that, because I think that we are going to have some public safety challenges in this county, and I think that we need some very strong leadership to be able to handle that.
We all made it. We all got there tonight. Thanks to both of our candidates for being here, for their responses. I thank all of you for your thoughtful questions, and I thank our panelists, Heather and Jim, for helping deal with all the questions that you did provide. But mostly, this young lady kept these two folks on time. Maya, right? Maya. Thank you, Maya. I'd like to give the mic back to Mr. C.R. Lara of the sponsor, the local, I'm sorry, the Latino Outreach Council.
There you go. Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, thank you all. And I believe that Kobe Jack is open. So anybody that is hungry, they'll be more than happy to see you there. And we'll see you again in 40 years.